Taking a look at your personal computer and software today with Peter Green of InfoStar Madison, our personal computer consultant, Larry Mueller here. Thank you so much for listening in. Questions for Pete, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email talk@wpr.org. Pete, welcome back.
Always great, Larry, and glad to help people out in times of need.
Here we have an email from Gina, who has a laptop at home. And when it's plugged in and not used, a video will pop up of random stuff, like, in quotes she's got here, cat doesn't like sweater, click to see more, unquote. We never click on it, but what is this and how can we get rid of it for good?
It sounds to me like she's got, there's some stuff trying to get in through the back door. One of the flaw, I'm not sure which version of Windows, but if you've got something like Windows Messenger enabled on your system, that's one of the things I would look for. You could, most Windows, you type in msconfig in the run. With Windows 7 or Vista, you just put it in where you're doing a search and it'll come up and you can click on that. And where you see the startup tab, that's where you can disable Windows Messenger. It's usually MSGS, I believe.
Okay.
But what I would do is probably that kind of system, you probably want some kind of antivirus, anti-spyware program on that system, whether or not you and make sure it's enabled, too. That's
right.
That's a key thing
after
you download those. Something like what Microsoft Security Essentials, AVG or Avast. There's another program called Malware Bytes. You can do search on that. I think it's Malware Bytes, BYTES.org. And those are good programs to run on your system, and they'll eliminate some of those scripts and Trojans and spyware, malware programs that are trying to run on your system and entice you to download, something that you don't want, or, just kind of run interference on your system.
There you go. Let's turn to the phones now. And Nick in Green Bay, we're on to you. Hi, Nick.
Hey, I've got a small problem. I've got a compact laptop that I bought a year and a half ago. Just a beautiful machine because I never get a laptop. My wife always gets one. But, she went to boot it one day, and it won't come up. See my phone come up, nothing will come up. You can hear the hard drive spinning, but nothing happens. You hit escape, and it'll stop trying to boot, but it just sits there with a blank screen.
How old's the system?
Year and a half, dude?
It's Windows XP, or Windows Vista, not that old.
Okay.
Of course, the computer's just out of the warranty date, so Compaq said, well, give us $50 and we'll see if we can fix it, and it's like...
Right. If you have access to doing searches online, the reason I'm mentioning this is I don't know the exact sequence of keys, but I remember having a problem with my hard drive in my system, or a problem with the Compaq system, and I called them up, and there's a certain sequence of keyboard combinations where the system is powered down and then you hold these certain combination of keys and then you plug it back in, turn it on, it resets everything.
You think there'd be any way to, say, load Linux on there to try and get it to come up? Or
I would focus on trying to just get it back to the way it was before you start dabbling and, try to, change the operating system on it. And, you bring up an interesting question, but before that, getting back to fixing your system, it's possible that it just may need a reset through, what I'm telling you with the keyboard combination. So if you do a Google search, you might be able to find what that is. Sometimes it's like Control-Alt and plus, and you hold it down for 30 seconds, or Control-Alt-Minus.
What kind of keywords would you search for something like that?
Compact boot problem. Hard drive spin, drive spins, no video. Usually you have about 10 or 12 words, and not including words like to and as and you know, but just descriptive words of the problem.
Well, we went on Modern Adele, so she always gets the new computer, now I get the crappy old one. So.
Now, as related to Linux or other operating systems, you bring up an interesting point. One of those, a way to deal with fixing the problem is one thing, but saying, okay, now I want to move on to another operating system, that's a whole nother bag of potentially worms, because let's say you get a Linux CD or a Windows DVD or whatever to try and bring that system up in a different operating system. You need to make sure that the device drivers for what's ever in that computer are available for that operating system, because if they're not, then
you can't do anything.
You know, you might get basic video, but you may not be able to get enhanced video. You may be able to read from your CD or DVD drive, but you may not be able to use it for writing to.
Drivers are a pain in the butt.
So you need to do, you know, for anyone out there, you need to do your homework before you decide to pull the trigger and say, okay, I'm going to redo this system in something else. Now, I will say, I've been working with Windows 7 a lot, and if I could lobby for Microsoft, if they're listening, if I could lobby and say, Microsoft, whoever you sold that Vista program to, you should be giving your Windows 7 to, because, you know, it was not a good thing.
Leaps and bounds
basically
better
with 7. It was like this huge beta test out there that they made us pay for. So Windows, I'll give you a perfect example. A real popular Office laser printer that we use, you would have to download this massive program, or, you know, have the disk for it to install it, and it was a network printer. And you know, it would take 15, 20 minutes, you know, go out there, do its searches, and then install all this stuff on your computer and say, okay, you're good to go. And in Windows 7, it's within the operating system, it's installed in 30 seconds. So there are those kind of significant differences that they actually did a nice job with Windows 7. And one of my desktops I redid, I was having problems with XP. I'm not saying it's a cure-all for everybody, but in my circumstances, I had an XP system that every day would constantly give me lockups, error messages once or twice a day. Redoing it with Windows 7, for probably the last almost 2 months, I haven't had one issue with it. And I haven't changed anything in it. So I'm not saying it's a cure-all. I'm just saying that they work with the hardware. It's better behaved. And if you're going to make that transition, just make sure that you have the device drivers that you need, and also back up your data files so you know, you can restore those and start over again.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Roger in New Berlin, we'll turn to you. Hi, Roger.
Hello, Peter.
Hi.
Good morning to you.
Good morning.
I have a problem. Well, I guess it's not a terrible problem, but I'm using Windows XP. It's a SP3 service pack, and the computer appears to continually search the floppy drive. Well, it's intermittently, it cycles, but I've noticed it on other computers as well. Would you have a solution for that other than simply unplugging the floppy?
You know, I've noticed that a lot lately.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if it's something that they've done in the operating system to, you know, almost like it feels like it needs to scan or talk to every device in the system on a regular basis and engages a floppy drive. Not quite sure, you know, the answer to that, other than, like you said, unplug the floppy drive, and most people aren't using the floppy drive. So maybe Microsoft felt that with some kind of recent download in the past year that they needed to engage the floppy drive and remind us how it's a forgotten piece of the computer.
It's noisy and it's annoying.
Yeah.
But I understand that the floppy drives aren't being made anymore anyways. However, I just thought you may have a solution for it. That's it.
You know, if it's something if it's a setting in like the antivirus software,
don't
where
run
you
it.
Can you don't run it. Okay, I was just going to say if it's something that could be disengaged or checked off.
I've seen the thing, unless it might possibly be in the BIOS, but I've seen it on other computers as well,
mm-hmm.
where it just clicks through, tries to read from the floppy, regardless of whether there's something in it or not. You know, the light comes on, you hear a click, 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 comes on, and it just continually cycles.
It's almost the end of an era. Floppy drives not being made anymore.
There you go.
I believe that's it. Just get a new computer. Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks Raj, for calling.
Yeah, it's a common. It just seems like the computer wants to talk to the floppy drive, just out of the blue. It just
maybe
says,
it misses it.
Yeah.
Oh boy, Rick and Gays Mills, on to you. Hi, Rick.
Good morning. I just made the transition from XP to Windows 7. I'm sort of getting familiar with it over the last week and a half. I'm calling to ask your recommendation on the best free download antiviral software to put on it, or whether maybe it's not even needed in Windows 7. My experience in the past was with Norton, which got huge, and I got rid of it. Mm-hmm. I did use AVG on XP, which seemed to work okay until the new AVG came out, and now it seems also slow and a bit inserts itself a lot of places. Mm-hmm. So, what's your best recommendation for a free viral software program for Windows 7?
Well, Microsoft makes a product that's free for downloading called Microsoft Security Essentials.
Uh-huh.
And it's basically Windows Defender plus antivirus. Windows Defender used to be available for XP, but I believe it might still be, but it was just for malware or spyware. Versus
okay.
Security Essentials includes the antiviral component. Just make sure when you download something like that you check for the updates and then look at the time that you know it's scheduled to run. I think their default is like 2 o'clock in the morning.
No.
The other thing is AVG still makes one available, Avast, Bitdefender.
The Windows one.
Yeah, the Windows one works pretty well. You know, if you're going to set it up in a business environment, just be careful about putting it up on like a server where it seems to want to engage every single file that is being moved or written to.
A home application with occasional times on the internet.
Yeah, so Microsoft Security Essential is going to probably work just fine for you. You know, with Windows 7, you'll probably be notified by them if there are any, you know, changes or fixes, and
go from there.
It'll probably be faster than using something like Norton or McAfee.
There you go, Rick. Thanks a lot for calling. David in Madison, it's on to you now. Hi, David.
Well, hi. Boy, we had a headache for the last couple of days.
Oh, yeah? What's going on?
Well, we have an Asus desktop computer, PC. And we've been running, it's Windows 7, and we have Charter as our provider. And in the last couple of days, we had a download from Microsoft. We got the new mail Live Mail 2011. And all of a sudden, we lost our ability to use our desktop mail. We have to sign into Charter and go through the putting in the password and all that stuff in order to send or receive mail. So I was wondering if there's a way to get it back on the screen. You know, you just hit the button and it pops up.
So what you're saying is right now you're logging in via web browser to access your mail on Charter's email system.
Yeah.
And you want to have your email back to your desktop so you download your emails to your system.
Yeah, sounds easy enough.
Well, what were you using before?
We had Windows Live Mail, but it wasn't this new 2011 update.
Okay. So did you update it or did you, like, reinstall it? Did it ever ask you a question if you wanted to import email settings, old email settings?
It didn't.
I'm hearing in the background Outlook.
We had Outlook before.
Is that what you're using before? Was Outlook?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we had Outlook on.
If you go into Outlook,
I can't even find Outlook on there. It's like they took it off.
What you need to do is there's a file. Outlook creates a file called .pst.
.tst.
P
as in Peter.
P as in Peter, S as in Sam, T as in Tom. So it ends in a .pst.
Okay.
That file is Outlook's data file.
All right.
So you might be able to import into Windows Live Mail your Outlook information.
Okay.
So you need to look, you know, find where that is on your system, because it's pretty rare that they would overwrite or delete that file.
Got to be there somewhere.
Yeah, it's going to be on your system. You can even look at the date and say, "Oh yeah, that's the, you know, that's the last date that we actually used Outlook and made the try to make the transition."
Okay.
The other thing is there's a file called .wab for Windows Address Book. So that's another data file. So for those people listening out there that use Outlook, you know, your .pst is your personal files for Outlook. If you're using a Windows Address Book program, something like Outlook Express, the .wab is going to have your contacts, your email, you know, file. So of all the people that you have in your contacts. So those are important files to back up and know where they are.
Okay.
Typically, they're named after the user, although Outlook calls theirs, I believe it just calls it outlook.pst, but you can, if you play with the setup, you can actually give it any name you want, but by default, I believe that's what it's called.
Well, what we've done so far is we've spent probably 6 or 8 hours, literally, with Charter on the phone, with Microsoft on the phone. We gave them control of the computer twice on two different occasions, and we went through our Geek Squad Best Buy guys, and nobody could come up with a solution. So they just had no clue.
Well,
yeah. I don't know what to tell you about that, but if you were using Outlook, you've got your data files on your system. Even if you uninstall the program, they're not going to remove those data files because they're typically in lockstep with the user login. So they don't uninstall those components or typically overwrite them, especially if it's a different email program. It's going to use different names. So that's the first area that I would look for, is to try and locate those one or two of those files. The other thing is with Outlook, I'm not sure if, you know, I haven't tried this, been in the situation where you are with you made the transition and you're saying that Outlook isn't there. The icon may have been removed, but the program may still be there. If in the event that you can locate and run the Outlook program, which would probably be in the Windows folder, if you look for the Windows icon, if you're able to run that, you can export your email settings. So I always tell people before and when I'm doing this, if you're going to make the transition from one email system to another or one browser to another, export your bookmarks, export your favorites, write them to a file, know where it is, export your address book, know where it is, and then export your email account savings to a file, because all those things can be imported into another program.
Yep.
So,
there you go.
And in Windows Live Mail, I'm not sure exactly where it is in one of the menus, but if you go, you know, you click on the menus and you go down the list, you'll see one of the options is for typically import or export. And that's where, it, once you click on that, it'll ask you, you know, where is it located and, you know, what program you're importing from.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant with us today. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll take your calls at 1-800-642-1234 as we talk personal computers with Peter Green. Joanne and Lac des Flambeaux, we turn to you next. Hi, Joanne.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hi. I'm having a problem with whenever my brother-in-law emails me anything with an attachment, whether it be a document or a picture, I never get the attachment. I can get attachments from everybody else, and he says he can send the exact same picture or document to lots of other people. They all get it, but I don't. I'm operating with Vista, and I think he's got XP.
Okay.
If he uses his home computer, I don't get the attachment. But if he emails me something from his laptop, then I can get it.
Well, that's a strange one, Pete.
Hmm. Now, are you getting attachments from other people?
Yes. He is the only person that I can't get it from.
So you're saying from his home system, he can't send you the attachment, but from his laptop, which I'm taking
assume is at work?
Is a work?
Yeah, his work computer is a laptop, and then I can get an attachment.
Then you can get those.
Yeah.
And
I'm saying it's his problem, and he's saying it's my problem.
Yeah, it sounds to me like there's a setting on his side that is not allowing something to go out.
But why? It's, I mean, he says he can email the exact same thing to other people. They get it. I'm the only one that doesn't.
Hmm.
So he copies you along with several other people sending something out, and they all, the rest of them, get it, and you don't?
Correct.
That is weird.
Now, do you get the email from his home system, but just no attachment?
Correct.
Hmm.
Oh. That's one I had.
And he's using a different email address, correct?
Yes. I think he's using Windows Outlook, I think, and mm-hmm. I've got Windows Mail.
Right, but he's using a different email address from the home system versus the laptop system.
That I'm not positive.
Okay. It's possible that...
Excuse me. Yeah, he probably does because right. it's his work computer, so that
right.
would be different because his home one has him and his wife's name on it.
Right. I'm going to take a stab that it's possible that the email attachment that is being identified and sent from the home system with your internet service provider is probably just being stripped of that attachment. Are you getting the attachment and just not able to see it, or it just doesn't even arrive?
Nope, it doesn't even arrive.
Yeah, I think you might want to inquire with your internet service provider and see if they can take a look at the incoming email.
Okay.
They can do these things. You just have to ask them. Tell them, you know, explain the same problem to them and say the email coming from his home system, the attachment doesn't make it, versus this other email that he uses at work, that same attachment does make it to my system. You know, can you take a look at the incoming email and see if the attachment is there and if they're doing anything to remove it?
Okay.
So that'll give you a clue as to whether or not it's actually leaving his system and en route, but they're blocking it.
Okay.
Or, you need to get to the next level of where the actual problem lies. And the only way to find that out is by talking to your internet service provider and asking them to take a look at the incoming email and see if they can, you know, tell you yes or no, the attachment is being blocked by us or it doesn't even make it in.
Okay.
There you
go. All I have to do is give them his email address and they can check from there?
He would have to send one and you'd have to tell them, you know, how to identify it. So you
have him send something.
Yeah.
With an attachment and you know, you'll know what it is, and he can even identify it to you, you know, very plainly so that they can see it.
Yep.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Stan in Partyville. We'll go to you now. Hi, Stan.
Hi, this is Dan in Partyville.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. This might be a dumb question, but I have a router on my home computer so I can use my laptop to get the internet. Can I make my laptop talk to my computer through the router? Say if I'm typing a letter on my laptop, can I send it to my computer so I can print it?
So you basically want to, you've got a laptop and you've got a desktop computer?
Correct.
So you want to be able to send a file to your, or grab a file on your desktop? What operating systems are you using on the computers? Are they Windows XP?
Windows XP, correct.
Okay. What you need to do, you can do this, and it's not a dumb question. It's a great question because it'll probably help a lot of people out there. It's not something we get a lot of chance to talk about, but I know I've answered it probably years ago. Whenever you want to have other computers that are in a small network or a large network see each other, you either work with what's called domains or work groups. And typically, people in their homes and in small offices are using work groups. But you have to be in the same work group, and you have to give it the same name, and the computers have to be set up to not only have that same name, but then you have to say, okay, I want to share this folder so that someone else in my work group can see it. Because without giving the permission of sharing it, you no one else can see it. Same thing with sharing printers and so forth. So if you you might want to go, I've got a number of tips on my tips page at infostar.com, but you can go out on the internet and, you know, do whatever your search engine is and search on work group computing, sharing folders, sharing files. And there are a lot of, you know, people put up a lot of different tutorials out there. But you basically need to go into you would right-click on My Computer, and if you click on Properties, you'll see a number of different tabs, and one of them allows you to basically set up a workgroup name. Sometimes it defaults to MS Home. Sometimes it might say workgroup. You know, give it whatever name you want. Sometimes initials for business, maybe your initials, you know, something you can remember, because you got to remember to put it in the other one. And you don't have to do it over and over again. Once you do it and you reboot your system, it's going to be part of that work group. And then once the work group is set up, when you click on a folder in your C drive through using Windows Explorer, you're going to pick sharing. And you have to allow the permissions for people to share that folder. So typically I say set up a folder that's just for sharing, you know, files and not everything on your hard drive. So just, you know, create maybe a share folder, call it share, call it whatever you want, and then just be consistent with it.
Okay. So as long as I go in and set up both my computer properties the same on both computers, I should be able to work it out.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. And I have an email from Lynn in Oconomowoc. She says, I have a wireless connection in my basement office, and I sometimes have trouble linking to the connection with my laptop on the first floor. How can I improve my connection?
Good question. There are... you know, get back to why that problem exists. One is it could be the all routers, wireless routers, not created equal. So it could be, you know, there's wireless G, B, and N. Depending upon, you know, how the house is built, the angle of the signal trying to get through from the basement, if that's where it's set up, to the first floor, you know, the angle of from where the router is and to where the room is. You can't see me in the studio, but, you know, let's say you got the router in the basement all the way, you know, 50 feet, you know, in a corner on the west end, and on the east end, you know, you're trying to get to the room and it's not above the router, but all the way in a different angle And going through cement walls, and then there's who knows what other kind of interference with metal and stuff. So everybody's situation is different. It is possible to get what are called boosters or amplifiers, and you can get different antennas for the routers. They can be a little pricey. So if you've got a B and a G route, B, G category router, I would recommend getting an N-class router, and I've seen them as little as like $30. I know the good ones can run typically, I'd say, between 60 and 100, and they give a better range boost to get that signal out there, and that definitely does make a difference. Typically, the antenna gain on the on those wireless routers is maybe in the 5 dBi range.
Okay.
And you can get ones that actually go up to like 15 or so, which is going to be better to put that sure. signal out. But then you have to look at what kind of connector it is and are they available, and sometimes they're not available because a lot of people aren't looking for those things. I've bought them off of eBay. They work, but you got to wait. You got to know what you're looking for, and then right. you got to wait from, you know, Hong Kong or China, wherever their supplier is. And so you may want to take a look at a different router, and usually they have a return policy. So if you just keep everything intact, you know, if it doesn't work, take it back.
Yep.
And, you know, the typical ones, Netgear, D-Link, Linksys, I think they even tell you on the box, you know, what kind of range you can expect. But when you're going from the east to the west end and yeah. one floor to another and through different interference, that's where you get the issue.
All right, let's go to John in Green Bay next. John, hello to you.
Hi, Larry. Great show.
Thanks.
I have a problem that my brother-in-law is having with his computer. He's one of these guys that he's had more computer problems since I've known him than anyone else I've ever encountered. But a year ago, he bought a brand new HP computer, Vista 64, home premium, lots of RAM, lots of memory. When he unboxed it, I went through and we deleted all the extra software that he wasn't going to use, you know, hoping that this would be the end of his problems. Because when he has a computer problem, he calls me, and then I get to kind of figure it out with him. So it's a year later, and he called me yesterday and said his internet is slow. So I know a couple weeks ago I was listening to your program, and you recommended a registry cleaner.
Right.
Which one was that, and do you think that'll take care of the problem?
Actually, they just came out with their latest version, like a 3.0. It's called CCleaner. C and then cleaner, C-L-E-A-N-E-R. I think it's the software company is like called Piriforms or something. But if you do a search on that, it's got it'll clean up all of the temporary files, you know, browser kind of stuff. It'll clean the registry, get rid of, you know, bad links and that. It's got an uninstall program and... there's something else they added to it. I forgot what it was, but it was a nice little addition. It's free. You know, they ask for a donation, but it's a free program. There's millions of people have downloaded it. When you run the registry cleaner, I typically back up the registry the first time, and then you may have to run it after the first time, maybe two more times. I don't think I've ever run it more than three times to get it to do its thing. And especially if you've uninstalled a lot of different programs and you haven't run the registry cleaner, it'll probably help just by doing that alone.
Well, there you go. Thanks, John. Thank you for calling. Carol in Wilmette, Illinois. We go to you now. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Larry. Here's my problem. I have a Dell computer with a Vista operating system, and it came with Works. And I uninstalled Works, and I put Bird on. Now I do not have Works anymore, and I can't open Word documents that are sent as attachments.
So... you don't have Works anymore. You've been using Word, Microsoft Word.
Yeah.
Now, are you trying to open up files that you actually created with Works?
No, I'm trying to create, like, if someone sends me a document, I can't open it in Word. It's a Word document,
right.
But I can't open it.
you sure it's a Word document that the...
It has, you know, DOC on
okay.
the end of it, so
All
I'm
right.
assuming. Yeah.
What you might want to do is... There is a Microsoft program, excuse me, they allow you to download for free, and it's called Microsoft Viewer for working with Word documents.
Okay.
So what you can do is, if you go to do a search on Microsoft Word Viewer.
Okay.
It's a free program, and it's basically like a little client that goes software client that installs on your system to allow you to work, look at Word files without actually owning Word.
Okay.
So if you download that and it allows you to open up those files, try and save them in a basic format so that you can use your own Word program to open it up.
Okay.
In other words, try and see where the compatibility issue, you know, lies. Is it lying with that it's a Microsoft file and you don't have a current enough version of Word to open up those files, or see if you can use the viewer to help you open up those files so at least you can look at them.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
They also make that available for Excel for people that send out spreadsheets. So there's an Excel viewer, PowerPoint presentations. So someone can create a PowerPoint and then use the PowerPoint viewer to actually look at those files.
There you go. Thanks, Carol, for calling. Appreciate it. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Jim Packard, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking some more questions now with Peter Green. Bob in Franklin next. Bob, hello.
Oh, hi. Hi, Larry.
Hi.
I've got a over 4-year-old Dell computer with Windows XP, and I really only do like email and searches on the internet. And I notice it's a little slow when I'm doing YouTube videos and things like that. Would I see any benefit by upgrading to Windows 7? Or should I just get a new computer?
Do you know how much memory is in your system? RAM?
Let's see. It's hard drive is 80 gigabytes.
Okay.
Let's see. It's a Pentium 4, 2.8 gigahertz.
My guess is you probably got 512 megs.
512.
Yeah. I would take a look at bumping that up to probably at least 2 gigs of RAM.
Oh.
And it's not that it's not as expensive as you would think, and it's probably the best thing you can do for your computer.
Oh, all right.
So I would bump up the RAM, and then if you heard the call before about the CCleaner, I would download CCleaner on your system and probably run it.
CCleaner?
C as in Charlie, and then Cleaner.
Cleaner.
C-L-E-A-N-E-R.
Yeah.
And do a search on that. It's, like I said, I think it's called Puriforms, but it's a real popular cleaner utility that you run on your system, gets rid of temporary internet files, clears cookies, history, that kind of stuff, which you should do periodically, and also cleans the system registry. It makes your system run better. And then adding the extra memory, Windows XP, actually all versions of Windows just like memory.
Yeah.
And Windows XP, it does significantly help the system. So going from 512 to 2 gigs, you're going to like the difference in speed.
There you go.
There's no real need to go to 7 then?
If you give me a compelling reason, I would say yes.
Doesn't sound like it in your case.
Yeah.
Okay.
See, I'm, you know, where I work and with what I do, You know, of course, people are asking me questions about, you know, what's the latest and greatest. And I would say, you know, if you could afford to get a Windows 7 system and run it in, run the Ultimate in 64-bit mode. And here's another thing. If you're buying a Windows 7 machine, if you're running it in the 32-bit mode and you buy more than 4 gigs of RAM, you're wasting your money. So yeah. If you get an 8-gig machine, 8 gigs of RAM in your machine, then you should be running the 64-bit because at least you can take advantage of it.
Yeah.
But then there's a lot of software that doesn't really run in the 64-bit mode. So, you know, we're kind of in that point in time where, you know, you can run more RAM and run the higher 64-bit version of Windows 7, but whether or not you've got applications that take advantage of it, you're probably, if you do, you're probably paying a couple of grand for those applications, so then you would want to make that investment to make it run better. And then with hard drives, you know, I'd say go out and get an SSD drive. It's more expensive, but it's a lot faster, and you can enjoy the improvement in performance. But you haven't given me any of those compelling reasons to do that.
So don't do it. Thanks,
Bob. Save your money and wait a couple of years, and it'll get faster and better.
Thanks, Bob. Good luck. Don in West Salem. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Hi.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Good. What can we do for you?
Well, I got a Toshiba XP. Got it shortly after they came out with the XP. Worked fine. I got it on dial-up mode through the phone lines. Everything was fine. When I wasn't online with the computer, I'd get my phone calls and such, and everything was good. Just recently, my phone started ringing, and it would only ring one ring, one real short ring, and that would be all that it would do. And I found out later on from different people that called that basically they'd get the one short ring and there'd be dead silence on the phone. And I had just put on some other phone lines or other phones, and I disconnected them, and I thought I had it, and what it ended up doing, I had to disconnect the phone line from the computer to get phone calls.
Okay.
Whether it was plugged or turned on or not, even if the computer wasn't turned on, the phones would only ring one ring, and that'd be it.
So it's almost like on an auto answer after one ring.
Yeah.
Yeah, but up to that time, it had worked fine. When the computer wasn't turned on, I'd get my phone calls.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Have you? So you've had this system for a long time. It's possible, you know, these things do fail. So it could either be a setting. What would I do to approach this? One is I would probably look and see if I have the latest device driver for the modem in the computer. And you may not, so I would have Windows look for it, or you could go to Toshiba's website and put in your model and on their website and go and search for it, and you know if it's available, download it and install it. I might if that doesn't solve it, I might consider disabling the device and then re-enabling, reinstalling it, and see if that fixes it. The other option, and if it's a laptop, it may be hard to do, is to actually try to disconnect it, because they may make it possible that you could actually unplug it from the laptop and then plug it back in. I mean, you know,
sure.
Depending upon the age, it might be possible. So that might be an option. And then if those things don't work, then I would probably look at replacing the modem. And, you know, installing that and see if that makes the problem go away. Because it sounds like the computer modem is running interference when it's connected to your phone line because it's answering after that first ring, but it's not doing anything else. So that's how I would do that.
All right. There you go. Thank you for calling, Don. Chris in Montford, we go to you now. Hi, Chris.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Good.
I have problems with my Internet Explorer when I'm at home. My home computer, when I pop up Internet Explorer, it takes a long time for it to bring up any web page.
Okay.
And then when I open another browsing window, it takes a while for that other window to open up. I brought my work computer home, and the speed is fine on that, and I don't have any problems. So I'm assuming it's just my Internet Explorer on my computer that's having problems.
Okay, have you tried running any utilities on your system like what we mentioned earlier, CCleaner? To
no, I haven't.
Okay, what I would probably do. Do you have any other alternative web browsers, different like Google Chrome or Firefox?
No. Nope.
That's one thing I would recommend is downloading and having another web browser to work with.
Okay.
Just so you have some kind of, something to compare to, because sometimes you might have a problem with one browser but not with another. So, whether or not you download Google Chrome or Mozilla Firefox or Opera or, anything else out there. Safari is another good one that Apple makes available. So download one of those, install it, see how it works on your system. I would probably get something like CCleaner utility that clean up some of your temporary internet files and then also clean the system registry. And then after you do that and you bring up Internet Explorer, you may want, because you can only do this through Internet Explorer when you communicate with Microsoft's website, is to look and see if you can run like an update check on it and see if there are any updates to apply to it and see if that fixes that too.
Okay.
All right.
That's how I would approach that.
There you go. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And Mark and Lafarge, hi to you.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for being there.
You bet.
Hey, Peter, I have an idea, and you're just the guy to help me.
Okay.
I need to replace my laptop. And it's a number of years old,
okay.
But I run a lot of applications that require a fairly high-end machine.
Okay.
So I'm thinking that it would be more economical to buy a desktop. You get a lot more machine for your money, and then a lower-cost laptop to travel with. But is there some systems that I can synchronize what's on both machines, including the PST files in Outlook, or I remember reading about this, but I haven't heard much that Microsoft's gotten into the cloud computing and
right.
have these programs up there.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, you could. There's a component of their Windows Live that they advertise, and I think some of their advertisements are entertaining, is there's a program that they include that's called Mesh, that was in beta for a long time, and someone I work with, a real big fan of using it because it allows him to be connected to both home and his work systems to allow him to do that kind of stuff. So that's one feature. Another program that you can also get as part of the Office system is called Groove. That's a company they bought a number of years ago that also allows you to share files easily between multiple systems. So I would take a look at the Microsoft Mesh and the Groove in terms of what you're trying to do. And then as far as, a desktop system, I'm going to tell you that I don't know if I've put these links up there, but I've put some money into newer systems lately. And I can tell you that the Intel i7 875K CPU gives you the most bang for the buck, and it can be. I've been reading that it can be overclocked. In fact, Tiger Direct has promoted overclocking a 875K chip to like 4 gigahertz, and I think its base is like 293. So they're selling these overclock systems.
Now, what is somebody saying? What is an overclock system?
Overclocked is the CPU and the combination of the board are rated for a certain speed, but for whatever reason, you can play with the settings and make the chip kind of rev up the engine. The CPU is the engine of the computer.
Right.
So, you know, let's say you buy a whatever car it is and it's got a 200 horsepower engine, you can put in a chip in it and make it run at 275 and you're not affecting any of the other components. Now, if you wanted to bump it up to like 400 horsepower, you know, you're going to have to upgrade certain components. And what they're saying is by overclocking that chip, they're not having to do a lot of system upgrades other than maybe adding an extra fan or two. But you can buy cases that have like, you know, six or eight fans in them and keep them real cool. The other thing is a company called OCZ Technology makes a hard drive, not a hard drive, but an SSD drive on a card that allows it to operate at a lot faster speeds and a lot less energy than a normal hard drive that people buy. So you can run things faster and cooler and save money and time. Well, not save money, but save time.
save time, anyway. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're taking a look at your personal computer and your software today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Thank you very much for listening in. And Pete, this time of the show, we always take a look at what you've come up with for a top 10 list of websites.
Yeah, it's been going on for a long time. Yep. So if you go to InfoStar.com and on the top left side, you'll see either the archives and you scroll down to today's date or click on current and they're all there. This first one is a leading iPhone, iPad, and iPod weblog called tipb.com. The next one is a gadget guide for geeks by geeks is how they state it. And it covers quite a wide variety of topics, and it's called GearLog. So gear and then log.com. Not a lot of people know, but you know, I like working on cars, and I just did a little restoration project. Well, for anyone that's an automotive student, there's a web resource called tomorrowstechnician.com.
Wow.
So that's a good one to check out. And this last next one, I kind of stumbled across it, and I've got a little paragraph up there, and I'm going to read it because it's pretty significant. It's a company that makes software utilities, but you'll understand why I'm highlighting them. They make a collection of small and useful freeware utilities such as password recovery tools, network monitoring, and more. Perhaps the hidden gem is the blue screen view, which allows you to view the BSOD, and there are a number of you know what I'm talking about, which is allows you to view the blue screen crash information that's stored in your dump files, so it allows you to interpret it.
Oh.
And it's a free utility. So I put the link up there to that. And what's nice about that is when, and I use this on a Windows 7 system, is that it allows you to look at the dump messages that your system has crashed on to figure out why is it crashing. So if there's a pattern and you're looking at the dump files and you see a pattern, that allows you to go to the next level towards fixing it. So, and they're free utilities. Number five has a wide variety of tips for Apple, Windows, Ubuntu, utilities. Just, it's addicting. And it's called addictivetips.com. So if you go there, you may be there for a while. This next one is dedicated to providing answers to everyday questions, and it's called answermefast.com. Another travel resource I found that has travel deals for flights, hotels, cars, cruises, and so forth is called Mobissimo, Mobissimo.com. I mentioned this one a couple of months ago, but it deserves being mentioned because it wasn't officially listed. Now it's officially listed in the top 10. It's a 25-year-old nonprofit organization, supports people who are creating solutions to protect our planet, and it's called EarthIsland.org. Number nine is not actually a .com, but part of Google's huge complex, and I'm basically announcing it to sign up for Google's places to make sure people can find your business. So you can actually go in there, and when people do a search in an area, that your business will actually be linked in that local.
Oh,
so that's if you good. Go, yeah. So if you go to Google's places or do a search on that and read it, you'll understand what they're trying to accomplish. The last one is a Windows Vista Forum resource to help you find solutions with Vista problems, and it's called VistaX64.com. And I'm going to put a little plug in for WisconsinVote.org, another good resource to check out, because what do we have tomorrow? Election Day.
Yep, that's right. There you go. And, you, of course, can find all those at Infostar.com.
Yep.
We didn't get them all. Bill in Evansville, it's your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I have three questions, actually. One has to do with CCleaner. Does that not do the same thing, or does it do more than what Norton 360 does, or even the Vista Tools section where you can clean up the internet files, take off the cookies, things like that?
It has those features in it, but it also has a system registry cleaner. So,
and the registry is what?
So well, the registry is the way that the Windows operating system talks to the hardware and the software to make sure that if there are links to program calls that have either changed or have been uninstalled, when they're left in the registry, the operating system wastes time and energy and effort to try and communicate with those items that no longer exist or are incorrect. So if you've done software installations or upgrades and you've got these errant links, your computer is spending time going through these. And if you've never done it, I would say don't be surprised to find hundreds of them. So the most I've ever seen, I think, was in the 500 range. And when you get rid of these, it no longer wastes time and energy trying to find those associations that no longer exist. So that's one thing. And it also has kind of a tie-in with an uninstall tool for removing programs. And I'm trying to remember, there was one new feature they just added into the 3.0. Oh, I think if you need to, I remember now, if you're trying to wipe a drive clean so that you're like giving a something away to somebody and you don't want them to see any of the information, they have a utility component that allows you to wipe the drive clean of any files. So
there
is another feature. And then if you actually go to their website, they list it as having it available for, I believe it's like $24.95 with priority support, but the free links are actually below that, and they list a site called FileHippo and another site, which is their actual website. If you go to the FileHippo, it'll prompt you whether or not you want to download certain things, and you only have to download the file. You don't have to download any of the other components. And I usually just go to their website and download. So
right from there.
And changing from Vista to Windows 7, is that apt to create any problems? How much would it cost, and how do you actually do it?
Okay, if you go to Microsoft's website or if you do a search, there's actually a utility that they make available that you can download and run on your system to see if there are any issues as related to doing an upgrade, whether it's XP or Vista moving to Windows 7. And it's actually also included on the CD to do an eval on your system prior to the installation. So let's say you just went out and bought Windows 7. You can run that so it can tell you, you know, prior to going ahead and moving forward with the upgrade or change, you know, what issues you may have, because they'll make you aware of that. And then as far as costs, you know, We talk about this. We've talked about this for years. Why don't they just have one version?
Yeah.
You know, but they don't. So they have, you know, Windows 7 Home, Home Premium, I think there's a business version, an ultimate version. They all have different features that they've left out, you know, or the ultimate version includes everything that they've done. And cost-wise, you know, it depends on what you're upgrading from. So that's
Vista Home.
Right. But, you know, then which Windows 7 would you be upgrading to? So, you know, you have to make a decision. So they'll have an answer.
What's the range of price?
I would say it's probably between $75 and $175 for probably an upgrade.
Okay.
It just depends on what you're coming from and where you're going to and which one you pick. So
excellent. And then my final question had to do with I have been using for a year Norton 360
mm-hmm.
security, and
okay.
I put it back on again, so it changed a little bit. It's some upgraded version.
Okay.
And since that happened with the previous Norton 360,
mm-hmm.
if I'd used the internet for an hour or so, or even for a couple of days, I would probably get two or three cookies that it would take off when I ran a security quick check.
Okay.
But now, if I'm just on there for an hour and just go to a few different sites and, you know, a couple different places, I only have 20 to 30 cookies on there. Have I done something wrong? What's going on?
So you're saying they're increasing?
Yeah. Now, and with this version, anytime I'm on there for like, well, if I just go to like two or three sites, I'm going to have at least a dozen cookies. And if I go to five or six sites, I'm going to have 20 to 30.
Yeah. It's the cookies are based on the websites that you visit, and it's really determined by the website to generate a cookie and write it to your mm-hmm. system. And they may have different cookies enabled for different pages.
But I mean, a lot of the sites that I go to would have been the same ones that I was going to before I changed the system. And I'm just wondering, is that because this system is more... it's detecting more cookies, or is suddenly the internet just putting out 10 times as many cookies?
It's probably both. It's probably, you know, it's a security sensitivity issue, and it's also, it's both, could be something that Norton has changed, as well as the websites that, you know, the software is evolving. There's now, you know, an HTML5 standard out there. So as the web evolves and the software evolves, you know, if you turn down your security settings, you know, it may make the cookies less, you know, of an issue. But it's a combination of the two.
Yep, there you go. Thanks, Bill, for calling. Appreciate it.
It's sort of like you look under the hood of an engine in a car that was built in the 70s and look at how many wires there were, and now look under the hood of a car that was built, you know, yesterday in 2010 and go, okay, hands off.
All right, Dan and Lamira, what's your question?
Gentlemen, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I recently purchased an Asus G73 laptop computer.
Okay.
It's got 6 gigs of RAM, the i7 core processor, Windows 7 64-bit. And it's also got this Radeon 5870 video processor with a gig of video memory.
Okay. Sounds nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it should be. but I've been having this problem running memory and video intensive programs, like games specifically.
Okay.
Sometimes the screen will flicker, and the more often it does that, the more likely it is to crash. And
right.
when it crashes, the screen either goes black, or more often I'll get these vertical gray lines.
Okay.
And it'll just freeze up, and
okay.
it'll make a terrible sound, and the only way to, you know, I'll have to restart the computer to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently AMD, who manufactures the Radeon processors, knows about the issue.
Okay.
They've issued some hot fixes and little things like that, and I've tried those, and they don't seem to work. So I was hoping you could. I was hoping this was a problem that you've dealt with before.
what kind of recourse have they given you? How old's the system? How long have you had the system?
Oh, about 6 weeks.
Okay. What kind of recourse are they giving you as far as, you know, they've acknowledged that there's a problem with it? And they're trying these hot fixes, and the hot fixes don't seem to be working.
Yeah, well, as far as I can tell, they're not they're not, they're not willing to replace it. I'm not really aware of any recourse that they've given us so far.
Yeah. See, you know, to me, that's frustrating. If it's a known issue and they're applying fixes and you're still experiencing the problem, you know, they should be owning up and being responsible to deal with it.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, the whole thing leads to bad device drivers, and they're just not getting it. I mean, either they outright, you know, if they can't fix it, then the component should be replaced with something that should perform at least at what you're expecting the 1 gig, you know, ATI Radeon card to do.
Yeah.
You know, and if all fingers are pointing to that's what the problem is, then, you know, that's how it needs to be resolved. So
then it becomes a legal issue, though.
Well, I'd be a little more hard-nosed with them.
Yeah, I would, you know, did you buy it from a catalog supplier? Did you buy it, you know, from an auction? Did you buy it from a store? I mean,
I bought it from Best Buy.
Actually. Okay. Well, I would be more assertive with them and say, you know, this is, you know, you've been communicating with ATI, you've applied the patches, and these are the performance issues, you know, and you'd like it resolved. You know, you bought a system that's supposed to perform based on the hardware and the software, and it's creating crash problems and system problems, and it's obviously not working. And that, you know, their answer might be, well, okay, we'll take it back in and send it to the manufacturer. That, I mean, that's one thing, and it leaves you without a computer, but that is their option to do that. And, you know, you might want to make a statement, well, if you do that and it comes back and I still have issues with it, then I want you to take the responsibility and give me a new machine and replace it.
Yeah.
So I think you need to just be a little bit more assertive with them and not accept that, you know, maybe there's a fix that lies out there, because it might not be.
Yeah. Yep.
It might go on and they may not have enough, you know, occurrences of this system out there and enough complaints that make it worthy of their attention that they want to take care of it.
Yep. So be a little more assertive on it.
Yep.
And good luck. Thanks for calling. It,
you know, video and system problems can be annoying, and unless the manufacturers have owned up to it and tackled it and taken it on and fixed it, it will continue to persist until they actually say, "Oh yeah, you know what? We do have about, you know, 2,500 complaints of this, and we might want to take a look at fixing it because people keep calling back and they're angry."
On to Maynard in Milwaukee. Hello to you.
Ah, hello, Larry. Hello, Peter.
Hi.
Our HP computer is about 5 years old. It's running Windows XP with the Service Pack updates. And about 2 weeks ago, it began to slowly start running slower and slower. And this morning, I got the infamous blue screen. And I was able to tap the F10 button and I think it's PC Recovery, and they let you do a little diagnostic, and it said that the hard drive failed the smart short self-test.
Okay.
And it gave an error code, HD521-2W, and just by looking a little more closely at some of the detailed information, it seems like I may have only about 500 megabytes of free space left.
Okay.
And I'm wondering, I can't seem to get past the blue screen to do anything to kind of correct this. Any suggestions?
So every time you turn it on, you keep getting to a blue screen? You mean it doesn't boot up at all to a desktop now?
That's true, and this just happened this morning.
Okay. Well, one thing is, you know, I would try to get an interpretation of the error code, and usually you can type those in and do a search, and it'll tell you what it means, and, you know, you can read on, and sometimes you get some answers as to how to approach, you know, trying to fix that.
Okay.
If your hard drive doesn't have a lot of storage based on what's in it, you know, if let's say it's a a 10 gig hard drive and you've got 500 meg left, and the Windows operating system is fighting for that space based on how much RAM you have in it and how much is allocated for the recycle bin and the system restore, you could be at a point where it may not be bootable because it's got too many files dumped out and, you know, it's almost like it's choking itself. So if you can't actually find an interpretation for that error message and how to try to do some corrections to bring your desktop back up and then free up some space, what you may have to do is actually take the drive out of that system and attach it either as an external drive or an internal drive in another computer to allow you to take the data files off of it if you haven't already backed it up. So I wouldn't completely say, oh, it's not working and everything is lost. It's quite possible you can still attach that drive to another system and get information off of it.
Okay.
All right. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Kelly and Madison, hi to you. You have a quick question.
Yes. I'm a photographer, and I'm starting to drown in images and need more backup space.
Okay.
And I've already got an external drive and a backup of that, but those are filling up pretty quick. And I was needing to configure, like, multiple drives together, and I was wondering if you had any suggestions on how to go about doing that.
Yeah, there's actually a company, D-Link, that makes some pretty inexpensive external network-attached storage. In other words, they've got, like, an Ethernet port on it. I think they sell for roughly about $100. It's one of them's called the DNS-321. So you can add like a couple of whatever SATA2 drives you want to add to it. And I think I just saw on sale there are 2 terabyte SATA drives selling for like $100.
Seriously?
Yeah. I think I think maybe buy.com or Tiger Direct, one of those.
Okay.
So 2 terabyte drives. D-Link, if you do a search
like the
on...
wireless people.
Yep, D-Link, okay. And then it's a DNS, David Nancy Sam, -321.
Okay.
There's another one that's the next level up, and, you know, it also allows you to share printers and some other thing, but if you don't need that feature, I would save the money. Because I think it's at least $50, the 321's at least $50 cheaper. It's really easy to work with. You just plug the drives in, and you could actually remotely connect to those drives if you need to.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, using the internet. So,
okay.
That sounds like a good solution.
Yep. Okay. I've used a couple of them.
Okay.
They're pretty slick.
Great. All right.
Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Kelly. Thank you very much for calling. And Peter, thank you. Boy.
Time flies. Yeah, it went real fast.
It always does when you're on. And again, if people want to go to that top 10 list and see what else you got on your website, just go to infostar.com.
It's all there.
It's all there. And I'm looking ahead here and to the month of December, and I see you are going to be back on December 6th.
I think last year we had a furlough day for that one. So this year we'll talk about what's going on for the holiday season.
All right, that's what we'll do. Thanks, Pete.
Yep.
Peter Green from InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, and he will be back on December 6th, and we'll do this all over again. Coming up tomorrow, Karen Connolly and Lewis Wasserman introduce us to Wisconsin's own 20 Remarkable Homes, beautiful book, and then Jack Socha of Spring Grove, Minnesota has advice for photographers. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.